This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And I have a question for you. Are you ready to chart your path to financial independence? Well, get started with Portfolio Analyst by Interactive Brokers. Portfolio Analyst lets you consolidate, track, and analyze all of your financial accounts on a single powerful dashboard. And the best part? It's free for everyone. No IBKR account is required. Plan for your future with their new retirement planner. Tailor it to your preferences and market assumptions. You can unlock deep portfolio insights with comprehensive risk assessments and drill into specific metrics like portfolio holdings, allocation, and even performance. You can track your performance against more than 300 benchmarks, plus manage your portfolios confidently with GIPS verified returns. Sign up for a Portfolio Analyst for free at ibkr.com/freep-a. The best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers is a member SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Oops, he did it again. The Fed cuts rate, but, well, rates rise. The VIX skyrockets. And you have to ask, what is that telling us? The Dow Jones Industrial Average does something it hasn't done since 1974. And our guest today, Brian Shannon, technical analyst and founder of AlphaTrends.net. All this and much more on episode 900 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And there it is, just like we've been talking about. Well, let me say first, a little hello. Getting into that holiday spirit, Christmas time, Hanukkah, all the other holidays that we're celebrating this time of year. Hello to everyone. And yes, here we are. It is already the end of the year. And I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm your friendly host of this fine show. And you know, it's show 900. And we are approaching almost 18 years of doing this podcast. Can you believe that? 18 years. When the question came up, what's a podcast? I remember that very well. When someone asked me, as a matter of fact, my publisher of my book, The Disciplined Investor, which is available still on Amazon and Audible, more importantly, you can get the audio version of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, a great stocking stuffer for this time of year. But when my peeps, they said, you should do a podcast. I was like, what? What is a podcast? And that's where it started. I got to tell you, time flies incredibly. And I think what we have to talk about briefly before anything else today is this basic fact that we have been talking about this and spending a good amount of time on this subject. The market compulses about it. The media can't stop talking about it. And it's important. But most got it wrong. I mean, not to be a big pat on the back here, but we've been talking about the fact that inflation is not under control forever. That the Fed is going to make a misstep once again. They're going to make a mistake by holding rates in the wrong place and start reducing them down too quickly because we have not gotten to the end of this, thinking that they have this almighty power, this ability to actually do something that can really just shape the economy. We know historically that there is no magic bullet. We know from what we've seen that there is no way just to make inflation stop or start. In fact, if you recall, they kept rates down for an extended period of time because they wanted to get inflation. It took much longer than they anticipated. And then it became crazy and caught wildfire inflation. Why do we expect that they can actually get it under control faster just because they say they can? But markets believe it. The economists go along with it. The pundits all talk like they believe that, yeah, this is going to happen. And in the end, we have to believe it. because that's what markets want to believe. The hope trade, the I believe it trade, that's what's been going on for a while right now. And we saw inflation kicking up on one or more occasions over the past several months. And I can't count on my fingers and toes how many times the Fed has been pandering to the markets with the hopeful realization. They understand, I hope they know this, that they have their backs against the wall. And what they're doing is basically just going along with the markets telling them. They're not necessarily doing an independent job. I'm not bringing up politics here. What they are doing is just trying not to disrupt, surprise, or offside the market when in fact they are offside. They're thousands of economists that work at the Fed either are dead wrong or the upper echelon, the Federal Reserve Board, is not taking any of the cues from them, which is very possible. What exactly is happening right now is what we expected. I had friends, I had colleagues over the last several months, especially when President Trump or incoming President Trump was elected, saying, what's going to happen with rates? And I said, they're going to go up. They said, no, Trump doesn't like rates that go up. I'm like, I don't care what President-elect Trump likes or doesn't like. The fact is that with his current and with his platform, if you will, it's inflationary. The things that he can do immediately with tariffs and then maybe tax cuts down the road, both are inflationary. The desire to release the debt ceiling is not only inflationary, but it's problematic for bonds. And what we saw was on Wednesday, the Fed come and reduce rates again for whatever reason that they felt compelled to do so by 25 basis points, 0.025%, 0.25%. And they felt that this is something that they need to do and come out somehow hawkish in the discussion. Rates went up. The problem was that there's a lot of problems. I think the first problem was that when they talked about how there is a lower chance, the dot plots, the lower chance and the dissensions, the dot plot was going to be maybe two rate cuts in 2025 instead of four, three or four. That wasn't, I don't think that was the problem with Wednesday when that meltdown came, but it was when Powell said that they were thinking about how they don't see inflation coming down to their 2% level, their preferred level and range, maybe past 2026. That's 2 years from now, which totally blows the doors off their thought that inflation is under control at all. And what happened was rates moved higher. As a matter of fact, the 10-year moved towards a very important resistance level, now about 4.6%. Remember when the 10-year was 3.6% in December, September, 2 months ago. Yes, it was September, mid-September. And they were slowly climbing until the last several days with the realization that, you know, inflation is probably here to stay. But here's the thing. Powell is again trying too hard to appease markets. He's a dove extraordinaire. That's who he is. And while markets like that, the Fed, this particular Fed, is inflationary. Yeah. All right. I'll give you the fact that he did try to be a bit more hawkish because I think he's trying to front run some of the potential plans that are going on with this administration, with all the things that they want to do. But allowing things to run hot for this long is actually going to take a toll on the economy. So the sell-off on Wednesday, which was, I think, one of the worst sell-offs on a Fed day. But coming into Wednesday, coming into this week, there was already trouble brewing. I mean, have you looked at the performance of the housing sector, for example, the ETFs that are in the energy sector, housing sector, the only sector in the green this month, pretty much because of the good retail sales, is the consumer discretionary ETF. Everything else is down 6, 5, 8, 10, 12%. Small caps down 6%. Pretty much wiped away the entire move since the election. But before that, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, whether we want to look at this or not, there was something very interesting going on. And I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I put a note on Twitter. I talked about it on DH Unplugged that I saw this sinkhole brewing. Now, it doesn't have to collapse, but there was an undercurrent of problems that were going on in the market. Breath was bad. It was really a problem. And the market breath was so poor, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, for what it's worth, again, had a string of consecutive days into Wednesday, before Wednesday, of 9 days. Not since 1978 have we seen 9 consecutive days of the Dow Jones Industrial Average down. Meanwhile, the Qs are up. The Dow's down for the month. The S&P is down for the month. The S&P equal weighted is down pretty hard for the month, as a matter of fact. 10 days, including Wednesday, something not seen since 1974. So the question is, what does that mean? When we see the S&P regional banks down 11% in December, we see the equal weight down 6%, S&P down 2%, again, approximately, right? So for all this excitement and jubilation, once again, the rumor mill and the hope trade are defeated. While there's still more room, I think, in the year end to run, only a few days. But that seems to be an interesting tide that's turning here, and we have to see if that's going to play out. Interesting. So let's see what happens over the next few weeks, but not too many days left of trading to go. And I think no better person to help us with that is today's guest. Someone talks about the psychology of the markets. Someone who talks about all the things we need to understand. He's a full-time trader, educator, author of the highly regarded technical analysis using multiple time frames book. He's the founder of alphatrends.net. More than 25 years of experience, 52,000 followers on the trading apps, Twitter, number one ranked expert on Twitter in the categories of investing. He has 72,000 followers on stock Twitch. He's all over the place on YouTube. Let's bring him on right now. And our guest this week is my good friend, Brian Shannon. I've known Brian for, how long have we known each other, Brian? A long time.
At least a decade, Andrew.
It's at least a decade. It's going back in the early days when podcasting was like, what's podcasting? And when blogging was like, huh? You know, in the good old days.
You were one of the originals. You got me started on one and created a nice little thumbnail for Apple and that. Yep. I never followed through with it, but man, you've been amazingly consistent with your podcast.
It's going on. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. And you are also a consistent guy because I know you are very process focus. But I want to start before we get into your process about technical analysis and about charting and about all those things that some people like, what is that about? And give them a real taste of how cool it is and how I would say beneficial it could be in your investment process. But I want to go back way back into the Wayback Machine and ask Brian Shannon, how did you ever get involved and interested in the extent of the technical analysis charting that you do, and to a point that you've gotten so good at it that you've written multiple books that are just fantastic. And by the way, I'll put some links on here. If anybody's listening that wants to know more about technical analysis, Brian Shannon's books are the play, because I told you this before, Brian, I'm an easy to please guy, but these are so color focused and detailed and gives you everything you need. It's not like, you know, I've read books on charting that are all words. I'm like, damn, that's hard to get. Like, how does that work? You know, it's like trying to, here's a book on drawing and it's all text. No, you got to like see what you're doing. So great stuff on that. But how did you get involved in this? Where's the genesis of Alpha Trends?
The genesis of technical analysis for me was I had been involved in the stock market just kind of casually as a teen, really, and got an interest in it. There was a newsletter I used to read called the Cabot Market Letter.
Mm-hmm.
This is when I was like 15 years old. I'd go to the library and read this stuff. And I remember they said, buy this certain stock above $5 a share. And I was like, well, why would you pay more for the price of the stock? And then I turned the page and they had a chart and it just made sense. It was like breaking out past this level. And, you know, I didn't realize it, but what it was showing me was there was no natural source of supply that was going to hold the stock back. No, you know, profit takers and that sort of thing. So I fast forward a couple years later, I had graduated college, was just getting ready to start at Lehman Brothers in Boston as a retail broker. And I had taken a, I know you're a fisherman, so I had taken a trip up to Alaska to do some fly fishing and picked up the book called Secrets for Profiting in Bull and Bear Markets by Stan Weinstein.
Oh, the famous Stan Weinstein.
And devoured that book on a flight from the East Coast to Anchorage. I mean, I read the entire thing. It just made so much sense the way it was laid out and just really made sense of the market structurally. And that's where I think you have to start is to say, are we in an uptrend? Are we turning sideways after an uptrend? That could be heading for a decline potentially. Are we in a decline? Well, I don't want to be buying stocks in downtrends. I want to be buying stocks. And so it just, you know, made sense for me naturally. At Lehman, I was fortunate enough to work underneath a senior broker there who subscribed to the daily graphs, and he would marry the fundamentals with the technicals. So I got a good feel for that as well in terms of his, you know, main strategy was buying stocks of companies that reported positive earnings surprises if they were backed up with a good chart. And that really gave me a solid foundation for understanding both of them, technicals and fundamentals.
You know, what's interesting, something you just touched on, I think is, since we've known each other for so long and doing things that are hopefully educational for people and teaching people and writing books and doing podcasts and your videos and all that. You know, you mentioned that Stan wrote a book and that sparked your interest, and then your, you know, which eventually, let's get to the facts, your success in the industry and the business and investing. You know, my hope is that you and I are doing the same thing that somehow we're sparking something that somebody can come back, you know, in, I don't know, 20 years from now and say, you know what? I got this interest because I was listening to Brian Shannon on Horowitz's show or something like that. And, you know, I got that going. As a matter of fact, I had a great experience, and I'll shut up after this, but I had a great experience this weekend. Somebody came to me and says, you know, that I know, it's a kid that I know for many, many, many years. He said, I was at a financial coach's office up in, where do they live? I guess up in New Jersey. And I was going through this whole thing, and then we finished our sessions. And she said to me, here are some podcasts that I want you to listen to further your financial education. And mine was on there. Which is a pretty cool thing.
Isn't that awesome? Yeah, no, that's great getting that recognition. I mean, you do it because it's your passion, but to get that feedback and know that you're helping other people and that you can pass it down and hopefully they'll learn and, you know, make their life better, their retirement more comfortable, you know, provide cash flow with short-term trades as I do, swing trades. So it is really great to hear that feedback.
And, yep. You know. So I know that it doesn't, you know, you look at things in a very... I think from a very simple, it's very complex, but a very simple level, because you're process focused. You don't really let the things that are in the news push you and pull you too much, although you're human, right? You're a trader. You don't have any kind of like, I don't think, Brian, you're like, oh, I'm going to invest in something because I think that next year this is going to happen. That's not how you work, right?
No, not at all. Right. Not a bit.
So how do you, let's break it down from that, where someone, let's say I'm the opposite, I'm not the opposite, but I'm making this up. If I was an opposite person, I'd be like, hey, you know what? I think that we're going to see tax reductions next year because of the new president coming in. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to invest this way or that way. Or, you know, I think that there's going to be less regulations. So I think it's going to be good for the healthcare industry that the FDA will do this or that. And I'm going to invest that way. That's exactly opposite of what you do. What do you do?
So, but I would listen to that person. I would say, okay, well, you know, give me the tickers of the stocks that you think are most likely to benefit from this. And if I pulled them up and they were all in downtrends, I'd say, well, the market doesn't seem to agree. There's nothing here. If instead, you know, they're, you know, starting to break out of longer term bases and look like they could sustain an uptrend, I am human, as you said, and I like to know the story. It's good to know a little bit about the company. I would much rather, you know, I have more confidence putting more money into a swing trade where I know it's a company like NVIDIA versus a little crypto miner or something like that. And I'll trade them both. But, you know, as you said, human nature is we want to know what we're involved in. But to me, you know, the fundamentals and the technicals, I kind of view them the same. And by that, I mean, you know, when we look at a chart, what we're looking at is the consensus view of value today. And, you know, stocks trade for what they're worth. There's going to be a catalyst or some kind of policy change or, you know, product or whatever that might change that down the road. But as we know, the market is a discounting mechanism. So it looks forward 6 months and say, we're expecting this for this company. And you start to see those trends develop on the chart. So you start to see the emergence of an uptrend. So I look at that and then I'll sometimes look at the fundamentals and say, hey, look at that. The estimates for next year, last year they did 50 cents. Next year they're expected to do 85 cents. And to me, I start to see, you know, hey, the revenues were up 10%, 15%. They're expected to rally, you know, gain 40% next year. So I look at that and say, okay, here's how technicals and fundamentals are the same. What we're looking at is with technicals, the supply and demand of the chart. Are there more buyers, more aggressive buyers than there are sellers? So demand for the stock is outstripping supply and prices have to go higher. Economics 101. That's how we look at that and say, and for me, Andrew, it's the old maxim of you know, this was back to Charles Dow. One of the maximums of technical analysis is a trend once established is more likely to continue than to reverse. So I don't want to buy a stock that just went from 20 to 25 3 days ago. I want to buy it as it pulls back to 22 and then starts to turn back up again. The reason I look at that is, well, I'm not late to the party. It's, you know, taking a little bit of profit taking. Now the momentum appears to be turning back up. I can get it at $23 per share, set my stop at $22.20. And I'm looking for it to at least hit that 25, but most likely continue to go higher, higher highs and higher lows. So that's the technical aspect. For the fundamental aspect, in the back of my mind, I have earnings estimates are going from, what did I say, 50 cents this year to, let's say, a dollar next year. Mm-hmm. I know that there is a huge pool of growth investors interested in buying the stocks of companies whose fundamentals are improving. So the fundamentals I think most matter most are they selling more stuff, meaning are their revenues increasing, whatever they're selling? And it could be microchips, or are they mining more Bitcoins? So that's why, you know, the revenues are up for them. And are they making more money doing it than they had previously? So revenues going up, earnings going up. That is what growth fund managers look for. So if I can look at a chart and say, hey, it's in an uptrend, the supply and demand is right. And if I know that I've bought it smart after a pullback and it's starting to move higher again, I have a little bit more confidence knowing that because of the strong fundamental picture, that there are growth fund managers out there who are going to support the, or more likely to support this stock than the one without the fundamental story. Mm-hmm. So it's more about the psychology of what other people are doing rather than saying, hey, I like this stock because their revenues are up and their earnings are up. My opinion doesn't matter. It's nice to, you know, think that I'm smart enough to figure this stuff out, but I'm just trying to ride the coattails of the people who form these big waves and trends in the markets.
You know, it's interesting because what that gives you is confirmation, which is always the word that I think in technical analysis that I always use all the time, right? Multiple points of confirmation is better than one. Confirmation, yep, to begin with is better than none, right? And the more you can get, the better it is.
I like to say, Andrew, that, you know, when we look at a chart, what we want to do is we want to anticipate all potential scenarios. So we look at it and say it's in pullback mode. It looks, you know, from 25, it's coming down to 23. It looks like maybe it can find buyers at this 20-day moving average, let's say. So I want to anticipate that in that area, we have the potential for support. Mm-hmm. So if we then, you know, start to look at a shorter term time frame over an intraday chart, let's say over the last 3 or 4 days, and I start to see it stabilize and then it breaks higher. So as it starts to stabilize in that area, I look at it and say, okay, it's doing what it's supposed to do because there are typically buyers on a pullback. There's usually demand at that 20-day moving average. So I'm going to look to the shorter term time frame, and here's where I'm going to start to set my plan, my if then. If it breaks above $22.80, then I'm going to buy it because that's the higher high in the short-term time frame. But if it goes below that low of 22, I'm going to set my stop at $21.95. So I want to anticipate as it's starting to turn sideways. As it hits my trigger, what did I say, 2265, I'm going to participate. And then our job is simple. It's manage risk. If my stop doesn't get hit, I look for a shorter term pattern of higher highs and higher lows. And I just, my price target is always the same for a long. I don't look at it and say, okay, I bought it at 2260. My price target is 25. Mm-hmm. I say, it's up to the market to let me know. As long as it's making higher highs and higher lows on the shorter term time frame, I'm going to keep raising my stop up underneath those higher lows and hold it as long as the market will allow me to. Ideally, it will let me hold it for 6 months. You know, that's highly unlikely for the time frames that I trade on, but it's up to the market to tell us. We have to listen to the message of the market. And that's what I think I kind of specialize in and help people with, is that I'm a great translator of the message of the market. That's really all I am. I'm a translator. I mm-hmm. take this Russian foreign language to people and I break it down to the most simple right. terms and say, here's what it means. Here's what you can do to participate. Here's how you can protect yourself, and then manage risk along the way. Take a little bit of profits off. And winners don't take care of themselves. We have to manage our risk and raise our stops and listen to the message of the market.
It's a tough thing. I want to talk about time frames. I want to talk about that. And I want to talk about something you mentioned in terms of trend. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Brian Shannon from Alpha Trends. And what I want to talk to you about is Interactive Brokers Stock Yield Enhancement Program, which will help you boost your returns. Now, Interactive Brokers Stock Yield Enhancement Program helps you earn extra income on fully paid shares of stock in your brokerage account. It works by basically allowing you to have IBKR borrow fully paid shares from you in exchange for collateral, either U.S. Treasuries or cash. IBKR then lends your shares to traders who want to sell them short. Each day that your stock is on loan, you will be paid interest on the collateral value for the loan based on the market rates. See why the best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Open an Interactive Brokers account today at IBKR.com/SYEP. And we're back with Brian Shannon from AlphaTrends.net. AlphaTrends.net. Got a great YouTube channel. Got a great stuff that you want to see. Go over to the show notes for this episode and we'll definitely get all the place where you could find Brian and his latest books, etc. Now, let's start with this. I had two things I wrote down I want to talk about. One was a comment that you made about the trend, and the trend direction is more likely to continue than break. And that, the way I look at it is, it's very simple. It's the concept of inertia put into the area of a stock or a price. Price inertia, stock inertia, right? That's mm-hmm. pretty much what you're talking about, that the physics, it's physics. The physics, and that's where you can look at a chart because it's up and down, right? Is it heavy? Is it light? Is it going up, down? That's physics. The physics is what you're really talking about there, isn't it?
An object in motion will continue in that direction until met with an equal or opposite greater force.
Yeah.
In the case of stocks, as long as demand outstrips supply, prices will continue to rotate higher to satisfy that source of supply until it says, you know, until you tempt enough sellers to say, okay, I'm willing to take profits here. And then the buyers start to say, okay, wait, it's a little bit extended. We're going to back off the gas a little bit. It starts to pull back a little bit. And that source of supply becomes the equal or opposite greater force that prices are then rejected from, and it starts to the shorter term pullback.
And that's something that, as a technical analyst, as a charter, a trader that relies on momentum, pricing, trend, all those things that I'm going to mention, not fundamentals, but that has to respect. You can't fight that. Now, as a fundamental only, you can fight that, right? Well, you know, like, for example, on CNBC, you know, they got these, well, I'm buying into, Target. Wait, well, Target was just, you know, smoked. And I think the long-term story is still intact. Like, okay, well, how long-term? Well, you know, they said this, but I believe something different. Like, how is that possible? Didn't the CEO just come on and say it's going to be a crappy quarter in XYZ company? Yeah, but I think longer term, there's a great buying opportunity as it's going down. It's like, okay.
You know, the phrase that I love, Andrew, that kind of, you know, helps you with these types of things is, if they don't scare you out on the way down, they will typically wear you out. In other words, when the trend really breaks hard, and you look at some of the stocks, an example I was using a while ago was Roblox. Mm-hmm. Roblox was a huge winner, you know, back in, what was it,
2021.
Well, they came public in 21. It was a big stock. Then in 2022, it got hit from 150-ish down towards 25. And I remember people buying all the way down, trying to, you know, find the bottom in that. And some people found the bottom at 25. And that was in March or April of 2022. Well, then for the next 3 solid years, the stock never made it above $45, $50 per share. But just in October of 24, we saw that it finally broke past that level. And it looks like the stock is now finally ready to emerge into a longer term uptrend again. So if they didn't scare you out on that way down from $140 to $25 per share, most likely they wore you out during a 3-year period of trading between 30 and 50. So I think Target is probably one of those stocks is that, you know, it's just dead money for a while. Why waste your time with these ones? Find the ones that are emerging into an uptrend.
So you mentioned timeframes, and I want to explore this a little bit and get into this, because everybody has a different time frame that's more appropriate for them. I can tell you that when I invest, that's one time frame. When I trade, totally different time frame. That doesn't mean those two things are right for anybody having to, or that any particular time frame is right. But I want you to start with the audience, talk to our listeners about what the heck is a time frame anyway, and why is it important to me?
Sure. So when you look at a chart, for instance, you might look at a chart that is, you know, started, you know, a day trader might look at a chart and say, I'm going to look at the trades that occurred just since 9:30 a.m. this morning, and I'm going to be looking at a 1-minute chart, meaning every single bar or candle that you look at is comprised of 1 minute of trading. You have an open, high, low, and close for each 1 minute period. Well, for most people, obviously, that's just ridiculous to look at. Especially for an investor. For an investor, you might start your research by looking at a monthly chart, meaning each one of those bars or candles represents the open, high, low, close of that month. So you might go back and look at Intel for the last 30 years and say, wow, what a dog this is what you would most likely say. But you would look at that and say, now, what's the trend here? Are we in a period where we're starting to emerge into an uptrend? And for Intel, the answer is no. But you would look at it and say, okay, are the odds in my favor for even as a long-term investor? And no. So you would say, okay, I'm going to discard that from my consideration. And you're going to go down the list and you see NVIDIA, and you're going to see that's in a major uptrend. But is it too late to buy as an investment? History will tell us. So we can't look at that monthly chart and say, you know, the stock went from X to Y, and here, it's up 500% since, you know, the most recent low. Is it a good time to buy now? Instead, you have to say, wait a minute, let's frame this a little bit more carefully. I can't use the higher low on a monthly chart because that low was 6 months ago. And if I'm going to set my stop under there, well, then I'm going to lose 45% of my money. And that's just not good risk management. Mm-hmm. So you break it down to the weekly chart and get a little bit more detail. But now, since it's extended, you say, I'm going to look at the daily time frame. So to frame it a little bit better, maybe I should start with this, Andrew, and we'll come back to this. But myself, I primarily identify as a swing trader. So a swing trader is, I'm not a day trader and I'm not an investor. I'm looking for moves that last anywhere from a couple days to ideally 3 to 4 weeks is the sweet spot for me. So the way I look at that is I'll look at the daily chart and say, this is my primary trend. What I want to see is a stock that's in an uptrend, that's above the 20, the 50, the 200-day moving average. If it's above those, I look at the stock and I say, that's a purchase candidate. If it's at all-time highs, I'll have to look to the weekly time frame to say, wait a minute, is there a potential source of supply here that might become resistance that I'm not seeing on the daily time frame? If that's clear, I'll go back to my daily time frame and say, okay, we'll go back to my example of a stock that went from 20 to 25, it pulls back to 22. Well, then I look at that on the daily time frame and say, wow, it's right on that 20-day moving average. This is a place where I want to start to see if support is found. So I'll look at a 30-minute time frame. So each bar or candle is 30 minutes of time, and I'll look at approximately a month. So that month gives me the ability to see, hey, we've pulled back, we've started to go sideways, we've created this, you know, little sideways range, and now I can see based on this range that if it gets above $22.60, I want to be a buyer, because that makes the higher high on this time frame. And if it goes below 21.22, I'll set my stop at 21.95. So I'm buying at 22.60. I'm risking 65 cents per share. Next morning, I might come in and, you know, look to implement this plan. I want to buy it, you know, 22.60 or whatever I said. And said the stock gaps up to 22.80. Mm-hmm. And I look at it and I'll say, well, shoot, do I want to chase this stock or I want to give it a little bit of time? So I'll give it a little bit of time and I'll start to look at a 1 minute chart because I'm sitting here doing this. So I'll wait for, I have a strategy for this called chase the gap or wait for VWAP. You know, so it gaps from 22.50 to 22.80, runs to 22.90. It gets below the daily volume weighted average price. We'll explain that in a little bit. And then it comes back above that VWAP and that's where I buy it at 22.74, let's say. And then I will start to manage risk based on the higher low from the 30-minute time frame. As the stock starts to rally, I might decide to peel a little bit off on day one just to reduce my risk, and then continue to hold with a stop that's a little bit wider and gives me room to, you know, continue to hold it. From there, I switch from the 30-minute time frame to a 15-minute time frame. And what I'm looking for is a pattern of higher lows in there. So if we rally to 23 and pull back to 22.80, then rally to 23.10, 22.80 is my most recent and relevant higher low for my time frame. So I might raise my stop to $22.78. Mm-hmm. And I'll continue to do that process until I start, until this pattern of higher highs and higher lows really starts to, you know, if the stock moves a bunch, I might keep a tighter part. So it's up at 25.10 now, and I've got that higher low at 24.70. I might cut that stop to half of that position. In other words, I'll get stopped out of half of my balance. But now that I've got a nice cushion, a 10% cushion in this, maybe I'm going to go back to higher lows to give it a little bit more breathing room now that I'm in a position of strength in the stock.
How many stocks can you do at this at once with?
Yeah, great question. Typically,
I mean, it sounds like for a lot of people that listen, like one's enough, but go ahead.
Well, on any given day, I don't enter new positions more than about 2 to 3 is the most new ones that I'll put on. And that's actually a pretty busy day to put 2 or 3 new purchases on if we're going long, or short, I'm a lot less active when we're in a downtrend. But 2 to 3, and my typical open positions, if we're in a healthy trending environment, might be 6 to 7. Beyond that, it gets a little too much to manage. And I've also noticed, Andrew, that when I start to get that many stocks that are really working well, it's getting a little bit frothy in the market, and the market's most likely due for a little bit of a pullback. I'm really not that smart to get all that many winners at once. So I use that as kind of a cautionary tale. And I'll start to say, well, which ones are underperforming? Because those are going to be the first ones that I kick out if this market does start to underperform.
Right. Makes a lot of sense.
Or pull back a little, not underperform, but pull back a little. Yeah.
So you mentioned these timeframes. You mentioned some people will use, and I want to talk about VWAP and anchored VWAP in a second. I'm not going to forget that. But we talked about time frames, and there's a variety of different time frames. And one of the things I'm going to tell people they could do, we're going to hold this as a carrot. I want you to go to listen to Brian talk about 65-minute charts. I'm not going to talk about it with him here on the show today because I want you to go and find it. I want you to dig and I want you to find out why the heck this guy is using 65 minute charts. Like, what is the story with this guy? What is he saying? What is that? Did he pick it out of the blue? Anyway, you'll find out more about that when you go check it out. Probably just, I would say just Google Brian Shannon 65 minute chart. Would that probably do it?
There's an article called Stop Using 60 Minute Charts. Or stop using hourly charts.
Hourly charts. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, interesting information there. But when people first start, I noticed that they do some things like they try to go really short on their time frames. Like somehow they can manage this information. As a matter of fact, I've seen people do like tick charts.
And worst thing they can do.
And I'm like, what? How are you going to manage? Well, look at all the trades that are going on. I can see what's happening. I'm like, no, you can't. You cannot see something by smushing it in front of your eyes. You have to step back a little bit, right? Would you agree?
Yeah. The forest for the trees, right?
Yeah. This tick charts. I mean, there must be a use somewhere in this. And I know some people do things like, have you ever done this, like 1,000 tick charts?
I've looked at them before, but I've never found really any value in them.
Yeah,
I think they're really meant for more of the HFT program traders. They're really the only ones that can.
That would seem logical. And what about, now I'm forgetting the name, the X's and the O's. I'm sorry.
Point and figure.
Point and figure. Sorry. I don't know where that, I knew what it was. Do you use those ever? Because those are pretty cool, actually.
They are cool. You know, most charting platforms don't have them easily accessible.
Mm-hmm.
TradingView does, and sometimes I'll look at them on there, but I'm so used to looking at the screen that I have, which when I pull up a chart, it automatically loads a weekly time frame that goes back 5 years, a daily time frame that goes back a little more than a year, a 65-minute mysterious time frame that goes back about 2 months, a 30-minute time frame that goes back about a month, a 10-minute time frame that goes back about 2 weeks, and then I have a 2-minute chart for that fine-tuning of entry. So I'm aware of all these time frames. As soon as I click on a stock, I have that instant snapshot of where the big picture is, where the short and intermediate term and really micro trends are.
I'm going to make an assumption here. But when you put this on the screen, and I believe, we'll see if the assumption is right, and then I'll agree with it because I think you have it. You're starting with the longest term. You're starting with the monthly, right?
I'm actually not, Andrew, because I've pre-screened these stocks.
Okay.
These are stocks that are on my list. So I'm already aware that, you know, the weekly chart, and the weekly goes back 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't need to go back much farther than that,
right.
Typically.
Right.
So I'm aware of that, and that's kind of off in the corner. It's not in my main field of vision. My main field of vision straight in front of me, you know, your pilot's dashboard. I have a square with four charts, and that is the daily in the upper left. In the upper right is the 65-minute. Lower left is the 30-minute. Lower right is 10-minute. So those, I see them simultaneously, and I've trained my eyes to see them this way, so I know how one piece fits in with the other very easily. It's after decades of doing this, you know, that's the display that works for me.
You know, one of the things in some of these, I don't know what particular platforms you like or don't like, but do you use a cursor that is simultaneously the same price on all charts?
I find that to be annoying.
Really? I would think that you would have liked that because you would then find concurrent levels that are levels that you like.
I have the ability to do that. I'm clicking on a chart right now. It looks like I have to click on the shortest time frame for it to appear on all of them. But no, I mean, I'm more interested. So on the longer term time frames, you know, for a swing trader, the daily time frame, I don't have to be so aware of the exact level there.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm trying to do is take that daily picture and put it under a microscope to really see what's going on under there. So a 65-minute chart is just multiplying the magnification by mm-hmm. six times.
Right.
A 30-minute chart is magnifying it by 13 times. A 10-minute chart is making it into 39 periods.
Right.
390 minutes in a day times 10 minutes.
So let's talk about VWAP. One of the things that you, a number of years ago, and actually this was not initial, if I recall correctly, when I first met you wasn't something, but something you discovered and then honed. And then, dare I say perfected, but a VWAP, which was known for many years, a volume weighted mm-hmm. average price. And what was that? Well, back in the day, that was like you'd go on the desk and somebody said, hey, do me a favor. We got 1 million shares to dump or to buy or something of that nature. You know, yep. Work the daily, the weekly VWAP, and that's where you're going to punch your number for the sells. That's what you're going to do. And that made it so that the stock didn't, it may have moved, but you didn't get too much movement on it. You stayed within it. That was kind of a accumulation distribution signal, right? Staying with the market. That's where everybody was. You went a step further, though, because there was always that question of, okay, well, what VWAP? Like, what time period? From what starting point? That was always a question I had. Like, where are you starting this? You starting at the beginning of the day? You starting at the beginning of the week? Standing it from, and it, and in the old days, Brian, tell me if I'm wrong about this, if I recall correctly, it was always a time period based, right? Not a price based. It was like last week, this week, last month.
Yes. Yeah, so what's the average price? So to go back to your example on that 1 million share order, the institution doesn't want to disturb the market by, you know, soaking the bid and just, you know, destroying the price of the stock. So they would piecemeal it out. And the executing broker who they would give the order to, you know, would come back, let's say a week later and say, hey, you know, the stock traded between 50 and 55 and we got you filled at 52.50. You'd be like, hey, that sounds fair, right in the middle. Mm-hmm. But the average price adjusted for all the volume might have been $53 per share. Mm-hmm. So at that point, you look at it and say, wait a minute, how did I get ripped off on 50 cents per share on 1 million shares? That starts to add up. So it was a measurement, a benchmarking tool to say, to let institutions know, am I getting a fair price? At least the price that, and they refer to it as the price a naive trader could expect to get, mm-hmm. the average price adjusted for every single share. So that's where it came into. And I didn't invent it at all. I didn't invent the anchor part of it. That was actually by, I always forget his name. He passed away about a decade ago. It'll come to me here in a moment. I want to make sure he gets credit for it. But anyways, he came up with it. And the work on it kind of abandoned. So I was, you know, looking at charts on a platform called Realtek about 20 years ago, and I noticed this anchored VWAP tool. And I started playing around with it, and it was just a trend line. And I noticed, like, when I would draw it, there would often be support. It would bounce perfectly. What is this thing? Because this looks better than my moving averages. This looks better than Fibonacci. This looks better than anything. So, you know, I did some digging and started reading what little there was out there about it and just playing around with it. And what it really is, Andrew, to me, is it's the ultimate sentiment indicator. Sentiment tools are usually, you know, someone does a poll and you say you're bullish or bearish. Well, like all polls, like our political polls show us, people lie all the time. And there is no poll that's really accurate. I love to say only price pays, as you know. But anyways, so I started to notice this, and it would act as support and resistance. So, fast forward to about 8 years ago, I had, TC2000. They wanted me to use their software. I said, well, if you add an anchored volume weighted average price point and click tool, you got me. So they did. And I've been studying this thing, and it just represents supply and demand. Who's in control from any point? It could be from the beginning of the day. If we're above the VWAP, the buyers are in control 100% of that day. So we might have, the market gaps from 500 down to 495, but we are above the volume weighted average price for the day at 496. For the day, the buyers are in control. That is just a fact because the average price is 495.94 or whatever it is. So if we're above that, the buyers are in control from the beginning of the day. Doesn't mean, you know, since yesterday's close, but we can go back and start to look at other anchor points. So what we want to do is measure from, you know, who's in control with 100% certainty, because that's what supply and demand is, who's in control from any point in time. there's three categories that are worth knowing. One is time-based. So of course you've got your daily volume weighted average price, week to date, month to date, and year to date, which is amazingly support and resistance throughout the year. So you've got time, you've got event-based. So since the election, and I've colored my since the election anchor orange. I'm sure you can figure out why.
I like it.
So, you know, from an election, from a Federal Reserve announcement, from an earnings report, from an FDA report, anything, an event that causes, you know, a shakeup in the market, a shift in supply and demand where stock is revalued suddenly. So in other words, we're seeing, you know, earnings were reported, the stock gapped up. How do the institutions respond to that in the coming days? Do they start to support the stock and say, hey, this was a big shift for the stock. We're going to buy it for the next month at the anchor from the earnings report. And you'll see that that often is exactly the case. You'll see these stocks pull back to the penny to that volume weighted average price from the election or from the earnings report and just magically find a bid and bounce. It's just the most amazing thing. And the third category is from significant highs and lows. So if a stock has pulled back from 25 to 22, as we'll go back to that example again, I'll put an anchor off the high of the 25, and we'll see that the anchor, the average price starts to diminish, obviously, as the price pulls back. And as the stock pulls back, we've got that anchor at 22.50. Well, that's the point where the buyers, we can say with 100% certainty, the average buyer from this pullback from 25 is now making money. The average short seller is now losing money. Mm-hmm. So we know that the buyers are back in control. It's their game to lose. We don't just say, hey, they're in control. We're naive enough to think they're going to maintain control. That's why we set our stop. So just to wrap it up real quick, that was time-based, event-based, and then significant highs and lows. Those are the three categories.
What do you call that, price-based?
Price-based, exactly.
Okay. Let me read something to you if you don't mind, okay?
Sure.
From the AI machine.
Okay.
It says, Paul Levine, a physicist in technical
analysis. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yes. But here's something interesting. This is the first line. A physicist and technical analyst. So again, we talked about physics, right?
Yep.
Created the anchored VWAP, volume-weighted average price, in the 1990s. He developed it as a part of his work on the market interpretation data analysis system, or MIDAS.
Right.
Levine's work was based on the methodology of professor trader Kevin Haggerty, who used volume weighted average price curves in the 1980s. Brian Shannon, the founder of Alpha Trends, popularized the anchored VWAP and helped bring into the mainstream technical analysis. Shannon advocated for the anchored VWAP's ability to identify key support and resistance levels.
That's a great description. That's accurate, because, you know, some people tell me, hey, Brian, thanks for inventing the anchored VWAP. And I've got to back them up and say, no. Let's give credit where credit is due. And Kevin Haggerty was a trader over at Fidelity, by the way. And then he went with that group, tradingmarkets.com.
Oh, yeah. Actually, on the YouTube, you're credited with creating it. Brian Shannon, from 2020 video of Stock Charts TV. Brian Shannon, founder of Alpha Trends and creator of the anchored VWAP indicator. Just saying.
Yeah. And that's how, you know, we have to double check these things.
Yep.
I will, you know, and I wrote it in my book that I am not the creator of this. So I don't want credit for it, but I will take credit for breathing life into it where none existed.
Right.
It's the reason that it's on your charting platforms.
Right.
I mean, I've, you know, if I can pat myself on the back for something, it's for bringing it, you know, mainstream, basically.
I think the important thing, though, here is about the one thing that I think I could take away from our discussion is physics. And I'm gonna keep on pouncing that point, because I want to make sure people can get to the very basic part of how this all operates. Because as you and I could talk about this all day, and it seems very logical as we talk about things, other people are like, what the hell are those two talking about? Right? No matter how much we try to explain it to a first-time listener about this topic. You know how that is, right?
It's physics meets economics. And,
yeah.
And you know, it's the laws of supply and demand, and it's the laws of motion, equal or opposite force. The market, you know, the object is going to continue. So if you just keep it, you know, it sounds intimidating to a lot of people. And any new subject is such, you know, VWAP, what is that? It sounds so mysterious, but it's really just simple supply and demand. And if you just keep, I think all the, you know, everything that I do in my work, when I look at fundamentals, it's sales and earnings. I'm not looking at balance sheet, you know, cash flow and that sort of thing. I just look and say, that's just generally good enough to know that other people are interested. And then it's about supply and demand, and it's keeping it as simple as possible. I'm not, I don't criticize any other technical, you know, technique that other people might use, because if it works for you, great, continue to do it. But I like to keep it as simple as possible. It's supply and demand, it's price, it's volume, and, you know, a couple simple moving averages, and that's all I look at on charts.
Yep. Good stuff.
And time frames, multiple time frames is key.
Good stuff. Brian Shannon from Alpha Trades Trends, Alpha Trends. Make sure I say it correctly so everybody gets it. Alpha Trends, one word, .net. You can find out more information there. YouTube, he's all over. Just put his name in, just put his name in the Goog and you'll find him everywhere. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I hope everything is well, and we'll see you real soon again.
Great, Andy. Always great discussion with you. Thanks for having me on again.
Thanks. That's going to wrap up this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. You know, we have one more show to go. First of all, happy, happy, merry everything that's coming up this week. I really want to wish the best to you and your family. Thank you so much for spreading the word. And if you haven't done so, when you'd have your Christmas dinner, you're lighting your Hanukkah lights, you're getting together for that holiday dinner, tell them, hey, you know what? Hey, check this out. I listen to The Disciplined Investor. That guy Horowitz has some great guests and some great information there. Make sure you talk about that and DH Unplugged as well, where myself and John C. Dvorak get together each and every Tuesday and we talk about things related to the market, some fun stuff. People seem to like when we talk about the fishing, the cooking, the recipes, all the things we talk about at the beginning of the show and the fun ways that we have contests and all sorts of great, great ideas that come up inside that show. So do that. But also I want to mention we have one of the greats coming on next week, Jack Schwager. He's the author of the Market Wizards book, talked about the things, the essential things that need to be and how the market wizards of the world, the people that have the best trading records in history, have done what they do. So we're going to talk with him next week to close up the year 2024 and onward we go into 2025. Thank you so much for joining me this week and every week. I'll see you again real soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.